the core of our agency is helping people think strategically about their relationships, because everybody has these financial plans. But if you ask somebody, what are the 1,000 relationships you need to have or invest in to get you from 10 million to 100 million? Mm-hmm. And how are you going to love on those people? Not in a check the box at Christmas, or, hey, you know, we had a record quarter, or, hey, it's our 20th anniversary. Like, how are you going to show up for people? Like, those are the times that, like, people are like, well, John, I want to do anniversaries, birthdays, and Christmas. I'm like, if, take your wife, for example. If you show up for your wife on Valentine's Day and on birthdays and Christmas, do you earn brownie points? No, those are table stakes.
Right.
You show up for your wife on random Tuesdays and say, hey, honey, I booked you a spa treatment. Just go. I got the kids. You know, go enjoy yourself. Well, now you're choosing to love on that relationship, whether it's a client or your wife or your husband or whatever, because you wanted to. And so most people ruin things because they do things out of obligation or expectation.
Arise, champion. This is the world famous Steve Weatherford Show, where each week we bring you stories, messages, and guests to create massive breakthroughs in your life. Somebody say greatness. This show has been strategically designed to accelerate you, to thrust you to the next level. Greatness is in you because greatness made you. And we're going to help you get into the center of God's calling for your life. Arise, champion. Nothing can be denied. The one that won't be denied. The question is, how bad do you want it? Turn the speakers up. Call a friend and tell them Steve Weatherford is on.
What's up, guys? This episode is brought to you by my good friend, Pure Spectrum CBD. Pure Spectrum CBD is committed to cultivating and crafting the highest quality hemp-derived products and CBD products on the market. They're also the U.S. Olympic sponsor. And I've tried tons of these different products, from the bath salts to the tinctures, and none of them even come close to the pain management, the recovery, and the sleep performance that I've gotten from Pure Spectrum CBD. My deep REM sleep has gone up 28%. By comparison to 13 months ago, and I track it every single day with my Whoop band. I feel more rested, I feel more recovered, and that's what really gives me that edge to run 3 different businesses, to coach entrepreneurs, to hit the gym like a savage, and still have enough in the tank to really come through powerfully as a husband and as a father. So if you're looking to gain an edge in your day, Pure Spectrum CBD is my go-to choice to perform at my highest level. Visit purespectrumcbd.com today and make sure that you use promo code Weatherford, because that'll get you 10% off of your order at checkout. That's purespectrumcbd.com using promo code Weatherford at checkout. Enjoy the show. All right, before we get into this week's episode, I wanted to give a big shout out to the team at Whoop. Whoop is the number one fitness device in my life, more than a foam roller, more than a lacrosse ball, more than a protein shake. Literally, this is my number one fitness device. It's a fitness wearable, and it's something that you put on your wrist, and it literally does all of the rest of the work. I've spent 19 months gathering data wearing this band. I've got over 600 sleep cycles. I've got over 500 documented workouts. And when I got this almost 2 years ago, I was just guessing my way to optimizing my energy and my focus and my mood and my performance. I didn't know what was actually helping me. And now I have the information that I need, 19 months of it. And now I make data-driven decisions. And the band is so small. It's sleek, it's super lightweight, and it's dummy-proof. I'm not really good at technology, but all you have to do is wear it and charge it one time a week, and it does the rest. And for everybody listening to this right now, the team at Whoop, the CEO Will Ahmed, is going to give you the strap 100% free if you sign up right now. There's going to be a link in my show notes. I want you to go click it. And when you get your free Whoop strap, I want you to text me the word Whoop, and I'll add you to my Whoop community so you and I can compare and compete in sleep scores, HRV, recovery, and training scores. I love the Whoop band. It changed everything for me. And now you can get the band for free. And when I signed up for this, it was $149. So click the link in the show notes and get your free Whoop strap and enjoy this week's episode. All right, guys. So the man that I'm sitting next to, and we do, you guys should see our camera setup. We're recording this for Instagram Live right now, and I hope our cell phone service works, because we're out here in La Jolla and they're notorious for not having good cell phone service. But we got this thing like literally set up on like yoga blocks.
a little basket,
like a laundry hamper, a trash can, and then two yoga blocks
in floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking La Jolla.
Yeah, man. You know what, dude? We're doing the best with what we got. So before we get rolling, man, I want to bring our guest in. His name is John Rulon. He's a guy I've followed on social media for about a year now. But I actually listened to his book back in, I want to say 2015 or 16. I'm good friends with Lewis House. He had you on his podcast. I was like, wow, I really like, because that's one of my core values is generosity. I was like, wow, yeah. this guy actually has a strategy for generosity, and not just like generosity, like, oh, give to the homeless, but actually radical generosity that has a system and a strategy for kingdom work, you know, not just for business or for your personal. It's not manipulative. It just totally makes sense. So I listened to your book, and it really changed the way that I was strategic and intentional with approaching the people, starting and nurturing relationships that I knew would move me forward.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Lewis is one of the first guys that gave me a shot.
Yeah,
I mean, okay. Another Ohio
that was
boy.
One of your first big podcasts.
Yeah, one of the first big ones.
You
for
spoke
sure.
Really well on there.
Yeah, know? I was nervous. I remember flying into LA and Hollywood to do it with him because I mean, boy, he's got such a great following and great reputation. Sure. And you know, last thing you want to do is like you know have Tony Robbins be on and then next episode John Rulon be like want like because people already are like really gifting or like it feels like a woo warm fuzzy who cares topic and they don't realize that it really has nothing to do with gifting. To your point, it's generosity, it's relationships, it's how you stand out and build memorable ties with people. So gifting just happens to be the delivery vehicle.
So I wrote down a couple notes before we sat down because this is actually, this weekend is the first time John and I are actually had an opportunity to like sit down, jam out, talk family, talk mission, talk business. But you're a Christian, you're an author, you're a speaker, you're a husband, you're a father, you're a teacher. You live in St. Louis now. You're from Central Ohio.
Yeah.
But this is the thing where I kind of wanted to like start talking as you're one of six kids.
Yeah.
You know, I just had my sixth child, so I'm looking for some wisdom. And to give you guys like a little more backstory into like one of six kids, John and his family used to burn wood for heat.
Yeah.
In your home. So this
it
is
wasn't
like
how, decorative. It
yeah,
wasn't
this
decorative.
Is how basic living and you used to like milk goats before school.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. So just like, let's start there. Cause I'm from Indiana. And I always talk when I'm on stage, I'm like, oh, I come from humble beginnings, bro. I had Nike Air Maxes and I wasn't milking goats. Like, so I guess there's levels to it, man. So talk to me about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I grew up in a town of 317 people. So small town, 47 acres, heat house with wood, 1 acre garden. You know, I wanted the Jordans. I wanted the British Knights. Remember the British Knights?
Yeah. BK Knights. Are you kidding
me? That was a big deal. So like I was a kid wearing like my mom would go to garage sales and she could make a dollar go further than $100.
Right.
Because we just didn't have money. Like my dad, you know, had a job that was like a water engineer, basically wastewater. So I learned what I didn't want to do the rest of my life, which was bale hay while my friends were at the swimming pool.
Did you? Oh, and you guys had like a full acre of like vegetables and whatnot. And
that's what we ate off of.
Like, I mean, that was your food.
It wasn't like farmer's market, like take it to, you know, like cute, go to set up a table and like make
you want
to
eat, go pull it out of the earth.
Yeah. Like we would, like I had to have blisters all over my hands, like till they would bleed from like, you know, hoeing the corn and the garden and the beans and the beets and the, like my mom would, like we'd have a shelf down in the basement and would be like multiple shelves of like all the stuff she had canned and we'd go ask people to pick their apples that they didn't want. For free, and then we'd take it, go make cider, and then we'd have 100 gallons of cider in a deep freeze, and that's what we drank.
And, and Central Illinois has got like a really heavy Amish influence. Is there any of that Amish? I mean, I know it probably influenced your family, but my point is, does your family come from that?
No, they didn't. My mom was one of 13 kids, German Catholic.
Right.
I have 68 first cousins on one side of my family.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah. So my grandfather.
So you got to get your weight up, cuz you only got four kids.
I know.
Bro, like a lightweight.
I'm like, you barely replaced yourself.
Yeah, dude, I'm like a JV. Like, I got six. I'm on the JV compared to some of those.
Dude, we're not swinging varsity yet.
Golly.
Yeah, 13. And here's the crazy part. My wife's mom is one of 13 as well. So my mom is one of 13. My wife's mom is one of 13.
And she's from high school relationship.
No, I met her through ag. I spoke at an ag conference that her boss was in the audience. So big seed corn company.
Okay.
And we were at the University of
Purdue. Farmer's daughter, though.
Yeah, farmer's daughter. They farm
got
real
a farmer's
farm.
Farmer's daughter, too, yeah.
Dude, yeah, they farm like 5,000 acres of corn and soybeans.
Your wife went to University of Illinois. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, yeah, she did.
Yeah,
she bleeds orange and blue. She and so did her two of her sisters. So they're like obsessed.
Yeah.
Obsessed.
Everybody in my wife's family. So my wife, and just so all the listeners know, if you guys don't know, I met my wife at the University of Illinois. I was a senior in high school. She was a freshman. I met her on the first night that I was there. But her sister went to the University of Illinois. Her other sister went to the University of Illinois. Her dad went to the University of Illinois, so on and so forth. And they're like, that's a really good ag school.
It's really good.
And I didn't know that previous to going there, but there's a whole, so listen, men, if you're looking for really good breeding women, you know what I mean? I hate to say it that way, but my wife has given me six of the most beautiful gifts I've ever seen. If you're looking for a breeder, go to the University of Illinois campus. You don't even have to go to school there, man. There are so many farmers' daughters, man, you cannot lose.
It's true.
Am I wrong?
No, I mean, the quality of women.
We're 100% over here, John Ruland.
The quality of women in the Midwest, Dad, and when they come from
you can't just 4-H. Say the Midwest. I mean, the Midwest, there's a different breed in the Midwest,
yeah.
But specifically the University of Illinois. That's where they go, man.
I got four girls that would say, you know, four gifts, four daughters that are warrior princesses.
Too, yeah.
So I would have to highly agree with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting our families together, man.
Dude,
your daughters, because they're about the same age. What are your daughters?
10, 8, 5, and 18 months.
Oh, yeah. I got 11, 8, 6, and 3.
Oh, they will go. They will. Yeah. They would go off and play and never come back.
You know what I'm gonna do? Because we go back to Central Illinois, and we're only probably like 2 hours from you. We got a farm, four wheelers.
Oh, like, girls love horses. The outdoors, animals, four wheelers.
Yeah,
ATVs, we'll get all that stuff.
Some really good horses.
My wife to this day, we still go back and go hunt, and she's probably killed more animals than I have. Like, she loves the outdoors.
Really?
Oh yeah.
My wife could drive a dually and like pull a trailer much better than me. And I like regard myself. I wouldn't say like I'm a super handy guy, but I'm a man's man. I chew tobacco and I can bench 300. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a man.
You're a dude.
But dude, man, pulling a boat, backing down a boat, a trailer, driving a dually.
It's a different skill set.
That's what she does, dude. She drove a stick. She learned how to drive a stick before anything else.
So that was a rite of passage. Isn't you had to go the old pickup truck. You had to, if you want to drive, you had to drive stick.
And here's another thing. And then I want to get back to your story. But the women that God gave us allow us to do what it is that God is calling us to do right now. I really believe that, because that's the one thing about my wife that has been the greatest gift to me. If I say any attribute about my wife, and she hates this word because it's not a pretty word, but my wife is so sturdy. No wife ever wants to be referred to as sturdy, but my wife is so like emotionally sturdy. So it doesn't matter what she's going through. If she knows like I'm being called to something or I'm committed to something and I got to go, like she's just has an unbelievable ability to just get it done no matter what's going on in her life. And like, if I don't get sleep or if I don't get food or I don't have my nose, you know what I mean? Like, I can be thrown off of my game so easily. And I believe one of those reasons is because of the way that my farmer's daughter wife was raised up to just get it done. Kind of like, you know, the farm life. I didn't live the farm life, but you live the farm life. And to kind of segue this back to your family and you specifically, I was also listening to the Lewis House podcast that you did with him years ago, and you never got a B in school. So talk to me about like the sturdiness of growing up on a farm and how that kind of reflected itself in your kind of pursuit of excellence.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think that, you know, when you're on a farm, if you don't show up, something dies.
Right. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Whether it's the crops or whether it's the animals. So like, yeah. If you don't show up and milk the goat, like it gets mastitis, gets infected and will die.
Right.
If you don't show up when they need water in the wintertime and you don't want to go out because your fingers are like feeling like you're going to bleed from like, you know, messing around with the ice and taking care of things. So like, I think there's, you know, there's just what was the Super Bowl commercial where that was like Paul Harvey. It was like about God created a farmer. And it was a Dodge commercial. It was like, you know, if the consistency and steadiness and discipline and follow through and no flash, just get the work done. Mm-hmm. My wife has that. And I think I have that too. And so I didn't get any, I knew what I needed to do to get out of Dodge was to get good grades and get, because I wanted to go, not necessarily, not there's nothing wrong with it, but blue collar work. And I didn't necessarily want that to be my life. And so I was like, I'm going to do whatever it takes and, you know, show up. You know, it wasn't like, oh, get decent grades. It was like, no, I'm going to get the best grades, go to the best school, go be a doctor or a lawyer. Like, that's where I wanted to go. And so, but I think the work ethic has carried over into a lot of other things from, you know, being a farmer's kid.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like this is where just from the outside looking in, this is where I feel like your story really starts, is like after you leave high school, because one thing I left out in your intro is the book that you wrote down, Giftology, the really kind of like where the message really starts is about the time where you get a job with Cutco. So yeah. I don't know where you want to pick that part of the story up, but I mean, he ended up breaking some type of world record in sales, like,
yeah, man.
Just right after an alignment came into your life and allowed you to see something differently.
Yeah, I was 20 and I was looking for a way to pay for med school. Uh-huh. And you go work at the Time Gap for like $6 an hour. You could be a waiter at a restaurant.
But yeah, remember
like,
Abercrombie and Fitch?
Oh, yeah.
I had a job there, bro. I just did it for the free clothes. Of course. For the cheaper clothes. You know what I mean? I knew cheaper. That was not.
Were you out front with the shirt off and like, you know, driving in the.
For sure. I was definitely helping myself out for like 50% off t-shirts. Remember those t-shirts were like $40,
dude. That's 20, 30 years ago. That was a lot of freaking money. Yeah. So, if you saw me when I graduated high school, I was a country bumpkin, man. I wasn't being offered any jobs to take my shirt off at the Abercrombie. Yeah. To say that, like, I was the husky farm kid. Wearing like beat up Wranglers.
Sturdy farm kid.
Yeah, the sturdy. Yeah, husky sturdy. But I went to intern out of desperation for Cutco because I had a buddy who was a seminary student and he couldn't sell water to somebody in the middle of the desert. He was 6'8", amazing basketball player, but like super low key. So when Steve started selling the knives, I was like, if Steve Wiggers, the antithesis of a salesperson, can sell these multi-$1,000 knife sets, I can at least try. So I went in. I literally wore the one tie I had to look smarter and like my glasses to like try to get the job.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get the job. My fourth appointment, I pitch my girlfriend's dad, who's in Amish country. He grew up Amish until he was 6 years old. He was in the Amish church. They left. So he spoke Dutch. Uh-huh. He went and got his law degree. And he became the lawyer of all these like very successful businesses that are in Amish country. People don't realize like how successful these just because they don't have fancy cars or fancy whatever. Like the guy
can't see their money, but they got it.
They got it in spades. I mean, they pay for things in cash. Yeah. They go buy land. Yeah. It's like 1,000 acres.
They're like the German Jews. You know what I mean? Dude, like, they just know how to do money.
They just know how to do money. So I pitched him because I saw Paul. That and when you grow up poor, you notice when people are generous. And I saw Paul was always giving things away. Like he'd find random things like deals on noodles, buy a semi-load, and everybody at church the next Sunday would walk away with like a year's supply, like 200 cases. Yeah. And I'd be like, Paul, that was 40 G's. Are you insane? Yeah. And he just got a smile on his face. He's like, John, I just love showing up for people. Uh-huh. So I pitch him these knives thinking all of his clients are dudes. They're all CEOs of million and billion dollar companies. Maybe he'll have mercy on me and buy 100 of these $100 pocket knives. That was the hope. That was like a prayer. And Paul didn't make me feel uncomfortable, even though I'm pitching him knives for the second time. He bought a set, by the way, for three of his unmarried daughters, dropped like $4,000 on knives before, like, it didn't even make it feel weird. Yeah. So he leans back in his chair. I literally remember like the chair screeching. Like I remember like it was yesterday. That was 21 years ago. He said, John, I don't want to order the pocket knives. Could I order 100 of the paring knives, $100 paring knives? I'm like, Paul, you want to give a bunch of dude CEOs a kitchen tool? Why? Mm-hmm. He said, John, the reason I have more referrals and access and deal flow is I found out 35 years ago that if you show up for people and their family, you know, everything else seems to take care of itself. So for me, as a 20-year-old country bumpkin kid, I realized it wasn't about the stupid knives. Although to this day, we do millions of dollars in these knives still. The knife is a representation, a physical representation and a delivery vehicle for an emotion. It showed people, you know, that Paul cared about them and their family. Mm. People don't forget that. Right. Especially when you do it in a physical way with no strings attached, all these other things. So as a 20-year-old, I'm like, I'm going to mimic Paul. I want to be him when I'm 60.
Yeah.
I'm 20. So I'm going to start modeling and angling and figuring things out. So instead of buying beer in college, I had to invest $500 a month in knives to give out to clients and CEOs. I'd find a CEO of a $200 million company I'd want to meet. And I would engrave the CEO's name, family name, wife's name. Carve out 5 minutes on a little note. You know, I promise it'll be worth your time. So I mail off these packages from my dorm room and I'd get meetings with these $200 million CEOs. And they're expecting, like when I walk in with one suit I have on, these mahogany boardrooms, you know, like the old school, like Glenn Ross. I walk in, they're expecting somebody like 60 years old. I walk in at 20, their jaws hit the ground. They're like, are you John Ruhlin that sent me the knives? Yes, sir. They're like, man, I thought you'd be like this person, blah, blah, blah. He's like, what are you here to do? Are you here to sell me knives? And I'd be like, no, sir, I'm actually here to help you and your 1,000 sales reps do exactly what I did to you to your top 10,000 relationships. Mm-hmm. So I started to get POs for thousands of knife sets. Cutco thought they were fraud. They'd never seen orders that big. The CFO of Cutco, a $300 million company.
Because usually people go door to door to do this.
Yeah, it was all by appointment. But, yeah.
Doesn't order 1,000.
No, one person's going to order, even if you order the whole set of everything, the cookware, the knives, the silverware, it's 12 grand.
Right.
We were getting orders for 100 grand.
Right.
For 150 grand.
Right.
And they're like, "What is he selling them on eBay? Did he steal a credit card?" And I'm like, "Guys, you don't understand. We're using your product and we're teaching people, these business leaders, how to 10x their referrals and how to 100x their retention and how to get more engagement from their employees instead of giving them a ham or a gift card. We're like loving on these people in a really special way. Instead of taking them to Pebble Beach, we're doing this cool gift." And they fought me. But by the time I was a senior in college, Cutco, over 70 years, has worked with 2 million sales reps. We became their number one in the history from a town of 317 people. Because we understood that it wasn't about the knives. We were just using that as a delivery vehicle. And so I put med school on hold. I was like, I'd go to school, for another 8 years and be like $500,000 in debt, or I can do this. I didn't know what an entrepreneur was. I was like, I'm just going to start a business and see if I can roll with it. Mm-hmm. And so we started Joel Marion calls it melt your face off gifts. I mean, we didn't call it Giftology at the time. It was just called the Ruling Group, even though I had one employee, I felt insecure calling it anything. So I called it the Ruling Group, and it's been a wild 21 years, but I never looked back. Mm.
So now what you do is you travel all over the country and you teach these different corporations that sell how to sell better by gifting better, which is going to increase retention. It's going to increase referrals. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So, I think most people have marketing plans and sales plans and HR plans and loyalty plans. Most people don't understand the psychology of how to build relationships in business. They'll do things in business that they would never do personally. For instance, they'll take their top 1,000 employees or their top, 5,000 clients, and they'll say, "Oh, we did business this year. We're going to take them to the Ritz, or we're going to take them to Mexico. And then at Christmas, we're going to send everybody a set of Bose headphones or a Tiffany's vase or whatever." And they slam their logo on it and send it off to all these people. And what they don't realize is they would never go to somebody, their best friend's wedding, and on the Tiffany's vase, compliments of the Chicago Cubs. Like, that'd be the cheesiest thing in the world. But we do it in business and we think it's branding and marketing. And what we're really doing is manipulating. We're trying to turn that other person into a billboard for us. Mm-hmm. So people don't understand psychologically that they're actually spending money to devalue or unappreciate or manipulate their most valuable relationships. These human beings, like whether you're a human personally in a marriage or at a church or whatever else, we're all just humans. And so the core of our agency is helping people think strategically about their relationships, because everybody has these financial plans. But if you ask somebody, what are the 1,000 relationships you need to have or invest in to get you from 10 million to 100 million? Mm-hmm. And how are you going to love on those people? Not in a check the box at Christmas or, "Hey, we had a record quarter," or, "Hey, it's our 20th anniversary." Like, how are you going to show up for people? Like, those are the times that people are like, "Well, John, I want to do anniversaries, birthdays, and Christmas." I'm like, take your wife, for example. If you show up for your wife on Valentine's Day and on birthdays and Christmas, do you earn brownie points? No, those are table stakes.
Right.
You show up for your wife on random Tuesdays and say, "Hey, honey, I booked you a spa treatment. Just go. I got the kids. Go enjoy yourself." Well, now you're choosing to love on that relationship, whether it's a client or your wife or your husband or whatever, because you wanted to. And so most people ruin things because they do things out of obligation or expectation. And so when I go to speak or we consult, they're like, "Oh my gosh, I only give gifts after a deal's done. I only give gifts after referrals. I only give gifts at Christmas. I'm breaking every rule that you're talking about. And oh, by the way, like, we spent $10 million on travel and entertainment and our gifting budget last year was 10 grand. Like, you're being world-class at a level 10 over here and you're really a negative 3 over here. It's not congruent." Mm-hmm. We don't even, they don't understand that they're communicating that somebody doesn't matter. It's the worst thing you can do in business or any relationship is say, "You're a number. I don't care about you. I didn't know you well enough. Go buy your own gifts. Here's a gift card. Be gone." Mm-hmm. So once people understand that, they're like, "Dang, this is an area of opportunity. How do I love on 1,000 people or 100 people or 50 people or 5,000 people at scale? How do I do that thoughtfulness at scale?" And that's really the core of our agency is once somebody understands they have an issue and a gap, we tell them, "Here's how you fix that." They usually fall on their face if they try to do it on their own. Like, how do you handwrite 1,000 notes? How do you drop ship to 1,000 addresses? How do you engrave somebody's wife's name on these pieces or the husband's name or whatever? The logistics of playing Santa Claus year round is hard. Mm-hmm. It's not hard for you or I to do one nice thing for our wife. Anybody can do that. I don't care what your love language is. That's people, guys will say, John, I need help. You know, it's my wife's 50th anniversary. I'm like, you're an idiot. Like, she gave you all the clues for the last 50 years that you need. Mm-hmm. You've got to be thought. If you put half as much time into your wife as you did to your fantasy football league, she would feel the love.
Right.
It's intentionality. It's commitment. It's just follow through. It's just taking some notes throughout the year and saying, this is what she loves. This is what she cares about. And I'm going to show up for her. Mm-hmm. Clients are the same way. But when you start multiplying at times dozens or hundreds or thousands of people, that's where people are like, you know what? I'm just going to give everybody an Apple gift card and call it a day. Mm-hmm. And what they don't realize is the other person gets it. It's like, oh my gosh, really?
Right.
I did $1 million in business with you last year, and you gave me a piece of plastic and told me to go buy my own gift. Mm. That's how you're going to show me the love.
Right.
That's how you're going to build. That's how you're going to move me emotionally to want to go refer you deals and open doors for you. That's not how humans work. So the scalability of what we do on the agency side and saying, hey, we'll help you send love bombs to all of your most important relationships. We'll pick the gift because you're going to shop for yourself. Mm. We'll pick the colors because you're going to want to put the gift in your company colors, and the gift ain't about you, dude. Mm-hmm. The gift is about them.
Right.
It's about their family. Mm-hmm. No logos. You're going to put their name on it. You're going to put if they're a person of faith, we're going to engrave. So like one of our clients, Pete, wanted to destruct a deal with Tony Robbins. Yeah, Fargus.
Yeah.
So he wanted to do a gift for Tony and his top 30 relationships. I said, Pete, we're going to do knives. He's like, come on, really? Now, Pete and I know each other through knives. Mm-hmm. He did. He sold Cutco. He's like, really? We're going to send Tony Robbins knives? I said, check
this out. Did you know that I interviewed at Cutco? I got a job, but I never like ended up starting it.
Shut the front door.
What, swear.
When you were in college?
Yeah, swear. In the summertime.
What, why not? You're like, hey, I kind of like my abs.
It was the overwhelm of not really knowing where to start and having another option that was going to pay me like $8 an hour. You know, I was like, I don't really know where to start. I got the job and it sounds great, but yeah, I interrupted your story, but I forgot. I totally forgot that until you just mentioned it.
The funniest thing is my wife, who went to University of Illinois, went as well. And the office was a little bit like dumpy.
Yeah, it was very dumpy.
Because you know, a lot of the offices for Cutco, at least initially for a number of years, were being
rented space.
Well, they're just rented by college. It was a 21-year-old college kid running an office for 3 months. It's basically like a business mastery program. Uh-huh. For 3 months. You go run your own business, hire your own receptionist. You're leading your own company for 3 months. It's the best training in the world for anybody that wants to be a business leader, marketing leader, or sales leader. It is like hands down. And if you look at some of the guys like Travis Kalanick, who started Uber, guess what his first job was?
Cuckoo.
Slinging blades.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of them out there. A lot of CEOs. Because if you can go sling blades... the doors that's open for me personally, like it's almost like one of the most powerful fraternities and sororities in the world. Because it's all these people that if you can handle rejection and objections and setting your own schedule, it is like, what can't you do if you can go sell knives for a living while you're through college?
Cutco's probably already done this, but if they're smart, they're really going to go like get a monopoly on Mormon people. Mormon people can take rejection better than anybody, dude.
Why do you think they do? I mean, every MLM company is what?
Yeah.
Is based in Salt Lake. Why? Because they care about health. They don't do the, you know, alcohol, can't have, you know, like I said, they're all about health and they can handle rejection and they care about, like, they're great business people.
They're family-oriented. I'll tell you what, there's like, I don't necessarily believe or agree with the Mormon religion, but I'll tell you this. They do family well. You know what I mean? They do family extraordinarily well. They work hard. You know, I mean, everybody has the outliers, but like alcohol, drugs is not an issue.
No.
They do a lot of things really well. They can take rejection.
Amazingly well. If you go spend 2 years getting doors shut in your face.
Everybody else on the outside looking in, man, we're so offendable and you know what I mean? Mormons are rolling.
We hear one no and we're done. Like,
yeah, man.
Dude, they can hear 3,000. Yeah. So anyway, Pete came to me. He's like, John, I want to do something for my top 30, 40 relationships. Tony was one of them. I'm like, dude, we're going to do knives. He's like, are you sure? I said, just trust me. He's like, okay, I trust you. So we took this like $6,000 knife set. There's like 40 knives in the set. And we got 80 of Tony's quotes that he had spoken out as wisdom, part of his legacy over 40 years. So every knife was engraved with one of his quotes. Wow. And then we put it inside like a $3,000 box, cast iron. It's called a strong box. It's like, it's what a royal ship would have put all their valuables into.
Okay.
It's leather handles. And then inside we built a custom video screen. And Pete poured his heart out saying, future Robbins generations will use these tools as they break bread and celebrate, and they'll be reminded of the legacy that you created decades before. That's what that gave Pete the script. He's like, dude, this is beautiful.
Oh, you guys wrote the script for him.
We collaborate. Pete knows, like I said, sure. these are the 10 things you got to cover. And Pete just, I mean, he's a magician. I mean, he's just heartfelt and thoughtful. And he did a Christian, just wonderful, one of my best friends. So he does a video. We send it off, send off this love bond. You know, it's $8,000-$9,000 gift. What are you going to buy Tony though? That right. You can spend 80 or 90 grand and not get his attention.
Right.
He has 100 of everything. So we send it off. We didn't hear back for a couple months. Pete's like, did you send it? I said, yeah, we sent it. I said, dude, he's got like 10 houses. Like, just be patient. He gets this voicemail from Sage, Tony's wife, just gushing for 5-6 minutes. We've never had anybody send us anything as thoughtful as this. This is like, we will cherish this for years. Now, I mean, what do you think the real estate on his countertop is worth?
Millions. I mean, he sees his countertop every single day.
Every day, him and his family. And where do people hang out when they want to break bread with their inner circle? The people that are their close partners. It's the Last Supper. I mean, go back 2,000 years. Like, what did Jesus do? He got his dudes together before he went to the cross, and he broke bread and wine and like, because that's fellowship, right? I mean, that's like who you spend time. I mean, what are we doing here in La Jolla? We're breaking bread, we're celebrating, we're having cool, fun experiences, but it's around food and friendship and camaraderie. And so people make fun of, they're like, oh, the knives thing, or oh, why do you do this? And I'm like, it's not about the knives. It's about, it's connecting. It's helping people be more thoughtful in their connections. And then when you're not around with them, you want them thinking subconsciously about you, right? Like, that's what we all want. When we want referrals, or when we're not in the room, we want people to be bragging about us. That, like, that's the real true sign of like what your reputation is when you're not around. What do people say? Right. And so when you can own on somebody's countertop and be a part of all of those conversations and help remind them who they are and their why and their core values and their faith, I mean, it's one of the most viable, ways to build relationships on the planet.
That's good, man. I'm over here taking notes, man. Talk to me about mentorship, because one of the things that I've been taught, that I teach, that I speak on a lot, is the what you do is not nearly as important as the who you do life with, because the who you do life with will ultimately determine the what you do in life. And just listening to your story and hearing of different people come into your life and not necessarily teach you anything that you didn't know, but just allowed you to look at what you were looking at differently.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how mentorship have changed the what that you do in life.
Well, I think because I had a broken family growing up, I always sought out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wiser, older. Like, I always felt comfortable around adults, especially adult dudes that were successful. And I think part of the reason is I was craving that father figure. I was craving that. And not that my stepdad was great. He was focused more on, like, he taught me work ethic, and he taught me like how to work with my hands. Like, I'm not Bob Vila, but I'm like, I can fix some things and do some things because I grew up on a farm around him. But I knew I wanted to be successful, and I had to be around people that were doing things in a way that I just wasn't naturally around. I didn't grow up at the country club. I didn't grow up with money or wealth or business or any of that kind of stuff. So I think I sought out, I mean, even with my girlfriend's dad, Paul, like, I mean, I learned relationship building. I learned, it's sexy now with Vaynerchuk and all these guys talking about the long game. But I saw that in Paul. I saw where he had poured into people 30 years before with no strings attached. And then they would inherit some land. And who did they call? They called him because he played the long game. He sent 10 handwritten notes like every single day. I've been very good about surrounding myself with people that are good at certain skills or angles or whatever else. And that's really, like, I never thought of myself as being a speaker. In fact, I hated public speaking.
Right.
I would have diarrhea for 6 months. And this is not an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. I would speak once a year for Cutco at their big annual convention with like thousands of people. I would be like ready to throw up for days. I'd lock myself in a hotel room to work on my talk and rewrite it. Cause I didn't feel worthy. But what's interesting is a lot of the guys in Cutco went on to go become authors and speakers and write books. And they were my best friends. And eventually that rubbed off to where people started asking me to speak, and I would do it more. And then 13 years ago, I was golfing with a group of guys, and this guy said, John, God's telling me, and this guy didn't know me from Adam. Like, we just started golfing. We're in Chicago at this Christian charity event. And my business partner just bought half the company. And this guy said, John, God's telling me you're going to speak on the biggest stages in the world. Mm. My partner laughed audibly out loud because he knew I hated to speak. Right. But God has a sense of humor. And part of the reason I think that that came to fruition, one, is God knew, but also the people I surrounded myself with were really good speakers.
Right.
And people are like, who's your speaker coach? I'm like, I don't have one. I've surrounded myself with people that are world-class communicators on stage, and I've been able to watch what they do and learn and be around them on a interpersonal relationship all the time, where that rubs off. Like, it just, when you're around certain people, it just rubs off.
Right.
And so I think
it's culture.
Yeah. Yep. So for 20 years, people are like, why did you invest that money to do that thing with Matthew Kelly and bring him into speaker? Why did you do that thing? And it was like, 'cause I wanted to be in the room. You know, why did you, you know, not make much money? Like, a lot of the money I made with Cutco, I reinvested for a decade back into people and relationships and opportunities. If they would have saw my P&L for the first decade of what is now Giftology, it was embarrassing if you would have just measured the profit. But now, like, I'm reaping rewards based upon things I planted, seeds I planted 17 years ago. But the mentors for me, by far, because I didn't go up around it, I had to go find it and seek it out. And masterminds, I joined EO, and, you know, we're getting ready to join YPO. Like, I'm all about, like, putting the right people around me all the time.
No, that's really good. And one of the things you mentioned, I haven't shared this with you, but I've shared it on my podcast, and I speak about it. But you said, well, I get diarrhea for 6 months, and you were like, no, man, I really mean it. And I would feel like I'm going to vomit for several days. I vomited 4 minutes before every single pro football game that I ever played in, except for the Super Bowl. It was like clockwork. And you talk about, like you said, the word, like, I didn't feel worthy. And that's like, I feel like that's a thing that I worked through and a thing that you worked through. And I believe a lot of people listening to this could also work through as well, is like, God's not gonna, he doesn't call people that are qualified. You know what I mean? He qualifies people that are called. And so people that are listening to this right now, you know, and hearing your story, it was all about you playing the long game. And really what the long game means, and I wrote this down earlier when you were talking, is you said, when I was in college, I didn't buy beer. And I wrote down the word investment. And then for you to later say the long game. And then another language that I speak that you were talking about, you're talking about harvest, you're talking about planting and investing. In order for you to harvest a seed that you plant, it's got to be truth. And in order for you to know if that seed that we're planting is truth, you have to see the fruit of somebody else. And so you saw fruit. You said the word, I want to be him when I'm 60. So you saw the fruit of what could happen from planting a seed of truth. And so that's what I want a lot of people to hear me when I say, if you're watching on Instagram right now, is like, it's great to have a planting season. It's even better to be able to withstand the maturation season of nurturing and like that decade of your P&L. Just looking like an embarrassment and a loss, a lot of people can't weather that maturation phase to be able to get into the transformation, the harvest phase. And one thing I just wanted to point out to you, and then I wanted to ask a question about who taught you how to think how you're thinking, is helping people to understand that that maturation phase is never going to yield the fruit unless you're getting the advice and the wisdom, AKA the seed, from somebody who has done what you want to do.
Yep.
You know, so maybe just talk about how you've met people in your life that are willing to give advice and willing to give wisdom, but they don't necessarily have the fruit in their life, because the coaching space, the information space, the writer space, a lot of people are speaking from a place of not expertise. They're speaking from a place of transaction, meaning I'll give you some information if you give me some money, but I actually haven't let this information change my life. Because then at that point, it would be a transformational exchange versus a transactional one. So talk about that a little bit. That's something that bothers me.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, I never really considered myself, even to this day, I don't consider myself a speaker or an author. I'm like, I'm a business owner who happened to write a book. I've always identified as wanting to be somebody who had a business that was impacting their employees and impacting their customers. I think I see a lot of people that, yeah, have not owned a business, but are teaching people how to run businesses as a solopreneur. And I'm like, I mean, it's like a doctor who doesn't look, you know, doesn't take care of themselves. Like, I'm not going to take advice from somebody, to your point. But I think I've been fortunate to, you know, have guys like Paul, who I he was an anchor in my life. I had a guy right around that same time, Bob Gosser, who built a multi-generational jewelry shop, and he believed in me. I'd pitched him knives. He lived on the top floor of the country club, but he was a world-class human, and he took me under his wing and got me into Rotary. You know, when I was 21, they almost didn't let me in because I was still in college. I think that there's been people that I've been able to surround myself with like that. And I think for me, one of the things that was important to me was seeing how generous they were with their money. It wasn't just about like being successful, but like I had an early mentor, Ron Jensen, who trained under Bill Bright, founder of Campus Crusade, who talked about like the transition of like people, like Bob Buford wrote the book Halftime. And it's like when people become successful, then they'd wait till they made all the money and they're in their 60s or 70s, then they'd give it away. And I remember him saying, John, why can't you be successful and significant at the same time? And I saw him living that. And I saw other people that were attracted to him. Tom Hill, a guy who is a mentor of mine, who has a thing called Hill's Angels. The dude, you know, attracts billionaires, people that are way wealthier than him, because he's the type of dude that like still runs marathons when he's in his 70s. Mm-hmm. And he just lives his life in such a way that he attracts success because he really is willing to take the time to pour into people and be generous and do all these things that at least are valuable to me. And I think other people look at those character qualities and see like it's real. Like it's not just, you know, in a book. I didn't just read about it. Like they've been living it. And most of the time, I think I've been attracted to people that have been living it for decades.
Right. Yeah. Same with me too.
Yeah, it's like,
I mean, I know like anywhere and anyone can be a teacher, but in order for me to like go all in on a philosophy, like I'll take a tip or like a little wisdom, but in order for me to go all in on a like a life philosophy, a financial philosophy, a relationship philosophy, I'm going to need to see fruit from that tree, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
Talk to me about your faith, man.
Yeah, I grew up in a strong Catholic home where like we went to church on Sunday. Mm. My mom and really my grandfather, like that whole 13 kids, like strong German Catholic family. Tradition and ritual was really strong. Do the right thing, you know, integrity. But there wasn't necessarily, at least I didn't have a relationship with God. I think there's a God maybe, and I don't want to piss him off.
Right. So more of a religion.
Yeah.
Education of God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think kept me... because I was a pleaser and overachiever, like I made good choices based upon that. Like I wasn't the kid that was out, you know, smoking dope and partying and whatever else. I was getting.
No, you reserve that for people like me. Thank you. Some more drugs and alcohol and women for me.
So that wasn't my jam. Because I just was straight laced.
I need friends like you to drive me home,
dude. I was exactly. I'd be that dude.
I'm so, laughing, but I'm not proud of it,
dude. Well, we all have different paths, man. You know.
Well, you know, dude, I can speak to those people now because I've been passed out in the alleys before.
You've lived it, yeah. You reach. I mean, we reach people with our brokenness, right?
That's it,
And I got in different ways, but I think I grew up fearing God but not having a relationship. And it wasn't until we moved away from the farm to a couple hours away, my stepdad got a job, and I hated the first year of school because I came in as the new kid, wasn't the center of attention. It was a rough year. But one of the guys took me under his wing on the basketball team, and he noticed on the back of my shirt I'd played in a 3-on-3 tournament at a church, and it said it was 1 Timothy, whereas physical training is of some value, but godliness holds value for the present life and the life to come. He's like, hey, do you go to church? And I said, yeah, I go to church. He's like, hey, do you want to come to Bible study? And I said, when is it? He's like, Wednesday nights. I'm like, dude, I'm going to the girls' basketball game. What are you talking about? Like, we go to church on Sunday. Like, that's it. Right. But he kept asking. And eventually, he's like, hey, we have this volleyball marathon thing. Do you want to come to it? And you want to play in it? I said, yeah, I'll play in it. Well, of course, after volleyball practice was Bible study. Right. So the young youth pastor was just an on fire, loved Jesus, and just the kind of person you want to be around. And he started speaking about a Jesus and a gospel. Yeah. And I'd been to, you know, even though we were on the free lunch program, because we went to the church, we went to the little Catholic elementary school through sixth grade. He was sharing things with me. I'd went to school, religion class for 6-7 years. And in like 3 weeks, he shared stuff with me I'd never heard before. And I was like mind blown. And so at 16, I ended up giving my life to Christ because I was like, what they have and what they're talking about, I want, and I want some of that. And I don't have it. I don't have a relationship. I don't have. So I was like, I went all in, and for about a year, I was angry with the Catholic Church. I was angry with my parents. And I remember the youth pastor, Mark, being like, hey, you gotta, still got to respect your parents, and they brought you to this point. Like, you need to honor them. And so I remember going to Catholic Church, and then I went to church twice on Sundays to honor my family on the Catholic side, and then went to the non-denominational church. But it shifted my whole life. I mean, it you know, where I was going to go to college was going to be this, you know, this Catholic university, D1, blah, blah, blah. I ended up going to a small Christian liberal arts university. But it completely, you know, is that like little shift that pushed me in a completely different direction about what I wanted to do with my life and all these different things. I was still going to be a doctor, but like, you know, like God had a plan. Like if I hadn't gone to Malone, this small Christian university, you know, the internship with Cutco and the mentor Paul and all of these things that like I now look back, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, all because of a decision to follow Jesus. And it's carried over even there. I mean, like, you know, Cutco, early in the 20 years ago, it was, you can imagine, like, take 50,000, 100,000 college kids that are type A driven, outgoing mostly. Like, I was the guy talking about Jesus on stage saying, I'm giving credit to God. And they're like, every, you know, partying. And if you sold a lot of knives, dude, you want to talk about, like, I mean, you could have one of, you know, 100 girls if you wanted it. And I was the dude that was like, I don't want any of that. I'm gonna go back to my room and do my thing.
Yeah.
Go to bed early, which was, I mean, just melted people's faces off because they had never seen that. Now the culture's different.
They're, and like, you were like the Michael Jordan of knives, slinging knives, right?
In that little tiny bubble, I was.
Well, they wanted to do what you were doing, right?
The guys wanted to know my secrets on selling, and the girls wanted to, you know, yeah, wanted to spend time together.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a winner, dude. People want to be around winners.
Yeah, it's weird to think about. My wife's like she's very much a strong woman. And calls me on my BS and like isn't like she doesn't care about fame or celebrities. Like she's just around. Like
she's a like, farmer's daughter.
She's
man.
A farmer's daughter, man. She just like she's like I don't, you know, I'm not your Cutco cheerleader. I'm not, you know, like she was not impressed with any of that kind of stuff. Which was refreshing, right?
It's attractive. It's more than refreshing. It's attractive.
It is. But even now, like, we'll go to an event and somebody, you know, people will come up and want my autograph and silly stuff. And she's just like, come on, really? Like in Cutco. And then even just with the giftology thing, like the, you know, the platform. And she just reminds, like, John, don't forget where you came from. Like, this is like, which is a good reminder. But within that Cutco realm, my faith gave me an anchor during a time when I could have easily been like, you know what, like this would be, let's just enjoy this season of, you know, being able to be Michael Jordan and do whatever I wanted. I don't think I would have the business I have now if I had like went that direction. Like I was focused on building relationships in a different kind of way. So
I'm hearing you say the youth pastor when you were 16, it was the fire that he had and the certainty that he was speaking with, it really convinced you to enter into a relationship with Jesus.
It was him plus the guy who invited me was the valedictorian kind of dude, was the four sport, like best basketball player, best baseball player. He became my best friend. I almost went to Xavier, ironically. He played D1 baseball. Uh-huh. He could have played D1 anything.
Yeah.
Like he was, but he also was straight A's and he loved Jesus.
Yeah.
And ironically, his brother was the seminary student who sold Cutco that got me into selling Cutco. So, because he had gone to Malone University. So, but I think it was a combination of the fire and the approachability and the realness. It just didn't feel like a show. It felt like for Mark in the church, it was who he was. Like it just exuded this love. And then to see it play out with Greg, my buddy, who was like, you know, once again, he could have had any girl.
Right.
He could have done anything he wanted, and he was this humble, like stud, like just everybody loved him, but he didn't let it go to his head. And so I think that combination of both of those things was like, I respect that. I see light in that. I see something that like I can resonate with in that. Mm-hmm. So it was both. I think it was a both and. He was the messenger. Both of them were messengers in different ways.
Yeah, that's really good. And then as an adult, you know, one thing that I've been taught and I live by is at any time in my life, I always have to have a Paul, a spiritual advisor, mentor, a Barnabas, somebody that's always there to encourage me, and then a Timothy, someone that I should mentor up. Was there another spiritual mentor in your life, or is there someone in your life right now that is pulling you to your next level, and who's a Barnabas in your life?
Yeah, I would say that I mentioned Ron Jensen. He was for a long time. He was okay. Bill Bright's guy. He was, you know, when I got out of college and was starting the business, I got connected to him, and he was just this, deep, rich faith guy, you know, but attracted like heavyweights, like one of the original, you know, guys at Apple and like all these guys. And ironically enough, he's based here in San Diego, right? Just a wonderful human. And so I've had him, I had Tom Hill, who's a believer, who's the guy who attracts billionaires, but like, it's just he's in his 70s, just lives life to the fullest in every area. And because of that, he attracts people that are, you know, maybe have more money than him, but they just want to be around him because of who he is. So I don't know that I have somebody I'm mentoring up. I always have a couple guys like that. I just a guy in Dallas right now. His name's Ben Page. He just got married, and I've been pouring into him and challenging him in his faith and in his routine. He just went out on his own. And I think I've done a great job of surrounding myself with guys. There's a group that we have called the Outgive Club, and a number of the guys in there are believers. And I think they, in different ways, kind of throughout the year, there's different seasons. I don't know that I have one person that's a Paul or one person that's a Barnabas. I have a couple groups that are tight inner circle guys that are pouring into me and showing me what's possible and pulling me along and saying, hey, like, you have more, you can do more. And I think, you know, frankly, my business partner, who bought half the business from me, has been an anchor and somebody from a faith perspective. His name isn't on anything. People think he's a figment of my imagination. Like, you'll never see his name. Yeah. But he's the guy that every year ups his tithe 0.5% and has every year for a decade and just keeps giving more. He's not flashy.
Yeah.
And so I think
most of the real studs aren't.
No, man. I think.
Don't you notice that, like, the older you and I get and the more God opens doors for us to like be in rooms that maybe we aren't like qualified or certified to be in.
Feel that way every day, man.
Around like billionaires, and you're like, dude, if people, like, we go to dinner and like they're wearing like flip flops and board shorts, and I'm like, if I ever become a billionaire, I'm gonna be like this, because they make it when they walk into a room, they make it about all the other people that are in the room because they're secure. But when you're insecure and you walk into a room, you're thinking, everybody either needs to look at me or they're gonna look at me. And it's really just kind of, it's one of those principles that, you know, without asking you, I believe that you live by, and that is not just the generosity, but the intentionality of making it about other people. And that's really what relationships are about, is people just wanna feel loved, supported, seen, and heard. And if you can accomplish that with a gift, dude, do it with a gift. And something like, one thing I wanted to kind of talk about and share with people that has worked really well for me from a kind of a giftology philosophy is how I do relationships. Like, when I connected with you in Dallas, before I got home that night, you received a video from me. And that's kind of like my unique way. And that was the imprint that you actually put on me. I wanted to honor you with that. Is once I listened to that book and that interview that you did, I thought to myself, what is a way that I can give a gift to people that's different, that's thoughtful, that's intimate, that's unique, that they wouldn't get from anywhere else? And it's video, you know? And it's not video with good lighting. It's not video with, no.
It's not a production.
No, man, it's calling somebody, congratulating them, consoling them, or encouraging them. You know what I mean? And so I sent John a video, and I said, hey, John, man, it was really great to meet you. Just want to tell you, I love what you're about because you value what I value. So I honored you with that. I said, I like that. It stood out. Yeah. Okay. Talk to me about that, because I'm always curious when I send a video like that to people, how does it come across?
Yeah. No. It's I actually I use it on when people, you know, it's their birthday or whatever else. I hate Facebook Messenger and text, all this stuff. Yeah. So I send a video. I think at the end of the day, I mean, the five love languages. Gary Chapman. He's a friend and mentor of mine, and, you know, sold what, 30 million books? I mean, just, no, 22 million books. It's in 30 languages.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of books. All the video is it's an act of love.
Okay.
Like, you know, handwritten note is words of affirmation, or talking to somebody, words of affirmation, spending quality time. Like, what I love about what I'm learning with giftology And what I love about your video is like, you're just taking the time to personalize an act of love of saying, hey, I see you. I notice you. I value you. It is a gift. It is like, it, you know, the same way you get a handwritten note from somebody that's really thoughtful, like, wow, they took time. And it's specific, and it resonates, because as human beings, we all want to feel seen and heard and understood and all the things that you're talking about. So the video, to me, I was like, dude, he is a giftologist. He's one of me. Like and that was, I felt loved and seen.
It's an imprint that you put on me because you were passionate about something. You found a way to package it and help other people.
That's all. Yeah. I mean, that's all it is. So I think that, you know, spending quality time with people, that's why I think so many people invest so much in experiences, is that's an act of love. Mm. It's not scalable, right?
Right.
You know, this, like, I can't do this and spend time with anybody else. Mm-hmm. So like, quality time is really powerful for people to be, you know, the video, same thing, handwritten note, a really thoughtful gift makes somebody feel seen. So to me, like, though, all of those, you know, at the end of the day, like, you and I didn't invent things, like, that's God, right? I mean, that, like, you look in the Old Testament, like Proverbs 18:16, a gift ushers you before kings.
Yeah.
Well, the gift is just, I mean, you know, like, God's the ultimate gift giver. Jesus was the ultimate gift. Like, people are like, John, like, this is radical and revolutionary. Like, where'd you come up with this? I'm like, dude, I didn't invent any of this. Like,
it's kind of sort of biblical.
Kind of sort of biblical. It's been around, whether you believe that or not.
Undefeated.
Yeah. but it's funny to see it. All we've done, like, anything is like, it's nothing's doing to the sun. You may put some different spotlight or packaging or process to it, but I didn't invent any of it. You didn't invent any of it. It's we're just shining a spotlight on things that we've learned from our creator. And it's funny to see it work in the business world, because it is truth, right? It's God's truth. And
all truth is God's truth.
And God's wired us a certain way.
Yeah.
When I do something lovingly, whether it's the video, handwritten, or a gift, spend time with you, in your heart, God's wired us to reciprocate.
Right.
And oftentimes it comes back at a 10x or 100x level, because we're like, somebody does something nice for us that way. Like, I was inspired. I sent you a video back, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Because I was like, dang, like, he took the time. Like, we had, what, a 13-second conversation?
I wanted you to know exactly where I was at, though. I wanted you to know that I thought you were rad. I wanted you to know that you imprinted on me. I wanted you to know that I value what you value. And then I think I ended the message with something like, hey, man, I look forward to catching up with you soon. Let's get together. You know, just like that, literally, is probably 30 seconds. And the only reason I'm sharing this with people on Instagram or the podcast right now is because I want you guys to understand, we talk about being a giftologist. It doesn't necessarily need to cost you money. It costs intention and it costs strategy. So when you do meet somebody and you get their cell phone number, what's one thing everybody's going to do? They're going to reach back out to that person when they need something. So I am very intentional and strategic to not be that way, because when there comes a time where I'm like, hey, John, I'm going to be launching a book in 6 months or whatever, you're going to be the type of person and be like, dude, you never asked for anything. You've sent me 3 messages since I met you 6 months ago, literally just being a Barnabas in my life, encouraging me, edifying me, stretching me, challenging me, asking me, hey, Steve, is there anything that I can be praying for you in your life? Like, I'm intentional and strategic only with the people that I choose to want to grow in a relationship with them, and it doesn't cost any money. So that's one thing that I wanted people to know about me, that I've learned, that I've implemented, that I've done for years, that yields fruit, but it was something that I learned from you, and you didn't know that.
That's amazing. Well, what's the most valuable asset somebody has?
Time, cuz.
It's the most valuable. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to cost money, but at the end of the day, if it costs time, mm-hmm. it's even more like, people, companies are like, John, this is a lot of money. I'm like, you don't understand. Like, somebody's time.
And they know it's coming from you if it's a video, because they can see it.
They can see it.
You know?
That's time. That's the 30 or 60 seconds or 90 seconds, you'll never get that back. Mm-hmm. You could have spent that with your.
And they can save that video and show it to their wife and be like, you know what? They'll be like, who was that? Oh, is this dude that I met at this mastermind? But you know, dude, he's got a bunch of kids and like, he loves Jesus, maybe like a little bit too much, but like, who am I to judge? You know what I mean? Like, people know where I'm at. And this is the other thing that I feel like filters people. And then we'll tie a bow on this, because I know we're going a little late. Thank you for being part of this. and giving like you do. But so talk to us about your website. Talk to us about your book, Giftology. It's the art and science of cutting through the noise.
Yes.
And the next question I wanted you to answer was, how do you select the people that you want to grow and nurture with? You know what I mean? Like strategically and intentionally. I'm sure some of them are like, well, I want to do business with this guy. But also, what about when you're choosing life partners, you know, like friends, men that you want to do life with?
Yeah.
So talk to us, the website, yeah, your social media, and then answer that.
So what I'd say is, you know, I can give you the normal Giftology group, you know, and go check it out. What I think is more valuable is to give you your tribe, your audience. Like everybody has an exercise plan, a workout plan, a financial mm-hmm. plan. Nobody has a relationship plan.
Right.
Like who are the,
I do.
You do.
Right.
But,
Cause
you've learned. But I mean, most people are like, they're like, ah, we want to do this thing. And they do it randomly, haphazardly, and they haven't done inventory and said, I have employees. Who are the suppliers that have allowed me to have a business? People are like, suppliers. I spend money with them. I'm like, if they went away, you wouldn't have a business.
Right.
What about your mentors? What about your investors? What about people 10 years ago that poured into you? Who are all the people that you need to pour into to say, show gratitude to? Or who are the people you need to dig your well before you're thirsty that you might need in 5 years? Like people don't think about the chessboard of saying,
right,
who am I going to build with? Who am I going to? And so the Giftology system is our entire playbook. If we go to like a pro sports team and lay out a relationship plan, we charge tens of thousands of dollars to lay out this, the strategy before we even execute it. Anybody that wants to go to Giftology system can take the entire playbook, our formula, and go do it on their own. And the reason I give it away is I want people to go do it.
Yeah.
They don't have to hire our agency to do all that. Like if they're a smaller company, like the amount of people that have taken the book or the formula and now like they're experiencing growth because they're pouring into their relationships and they have a plan and a budget and a frequency. Like I get excited about it because one of my big goals is if I can get 1 million leaders, small and large, I don't care what size you are, to be more radically generous, that could impact 1 billion people.
Right.
You get a leader to be generous in their family and their business and their employees, that the ripple effect, the trickle down effect of that is insane. So I get really excited about giving away our formula. You can go to obviously Instagram at John Rule and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, do a 360 degree view. And here's what I'd say is most people want to go and go whale hunting.
Yeah.
They have their dream 100 list, which right. is cool. Like
people are going to listen to this and be like, all right, I got to go spend $9,000 for the great white buffalo.
Yeah, the great. And what they don't understand is Pete gave that to Tony when he already had a relationship.
Right. He had already nurtured.
You have to spend a lot of money for a long period of time. Like Jeffrey Gittimer is a big sales guy, author, sold 4 million books. I sent him a gift a month for 18 months, built him like a $5,000 knife set. I don't recommend doing that. I did that early in my relationship or in my business career. What I think is more powerful is to take all of these fires that are warm.
Yeah.
People that you don't have to do something.
Blow on them.
Just fan it. And then you pour gasoline on a fire that's already burning with a client. Guess what? They become a salesperson for you.
Right. Referrals, right?
I have some client relationships that I've invested, a lot of money over the course of a decade. People are like, why would you do that? You already had them as a relationship. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I couldn't hire them for 1 year to be a sales rep. For $2 million, they'd say no.
Right.
For this little chunk of investment of love, they're inspired to now. I talk about return on relationship. Mm-hmm. The ROR of that over the last 10 years has been 50x.
Right.
I invested, 25 grand. It's produced over $2 million. Mm. Show me a Facebook ad campaign. Show me something. Right. You can't touch relationships.
Right.
So to me, most people want to go external. Mm-hmm. Start with loving on your employees.
Yeah.
Don't give your clients this Ritz-Carlton service and then your employees get the Motel 6.
Right.
Love these people first and then love the clients that you currently have in your centers of influence. If you like, people are like, how much prospect gifting do you do now? I'm like, unless I have a relationship with them, I don't send a gift.
Right.
I used to send all these crazy gifts.
Right. Now, that was a season of planting.
That was a season of planting. I had no relationships.
Now it's a whole lot more. Instead of a handful of seeds, now it's like, I'm going to put you right here. You know what I mean?
And that turns into a fire way faster.
Right.
And
because you know where to start rubbing sticks together.
Yeah.
You know how to cut down on the wind.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is I used to try to convert everybody into being a giftologist. Now I take people that are already givers and generous and I show them how I can help them be even more generous or be more thoughtful. Mm-hmm. I don't have to convert people that are takers to be givers.
Right.
It's a losing battle. It takes time, energy, effort. It's not fun. So when I'm mentoring somebody, I'm like, find other people that are givers. Find other people that already bought into who you are, and freaking juice those, like gas those relationships.
Right.
No strings attached. Just because you love on somebody doesn't mean that you can expect them to.
Yeah. Just because they value generosity and you value generosity, don't expect them to be generous.
Right.
Like decide, one thing that I've learned that's worked well in marriage and in all relationships, and I know you, I mean, you wrote this book, so I'm sure this is you as well, but just decide that I'm going to be the generous one. Like decide you're the generous one in the relationship, and if you have to be a 90-10 guy or you're a 100% 0% guy in my marriage, I've decided that I'm the 100% guy. Like regardless, I'm going to be the guy that gives 100% of the time. And if my wife chooses to go 50 or 80 or 20%, that's fine. But I made a commitment before God and to her that I'm going to be the generous one. And so I've decided that in all of my relationships. Now, understand this, when people hear that, they'll be like, well, I'm going to get walked all over. No, no, no. Before you can decide that you're going to be the generous one in the relationship, you need to figure out what they value. So when you surround yourself around people who value what you value, and generosity is one of them, then you can decide to be the giver. But that's a filtering process. And kind of like when I sent you that video, and let's just say you weren't you and you weren't like the gifting guy and the generous guy, if you were just a regular person, they would still receive a video exactly like that if they valued what I valued. But I know this because I've done it before. Sometimes I'll send a video, every once in a while, it doesn't happen very often, but you'll send a video and somebody might be weirded out by that. That's a great filter for me because I know if they're weirded out by that video, they're going to be totally weirded out by who I am. Dude, I wear an American flag Speedo and I'll pull it out at any moment. You know what I mean? But that's who I am. So if you can't get over some like
a video
of me with like a dangling earring and half of a mullet, then you know what? You're probably not going to ride out with me. So I just wanted to mention that. That was the thing that I forgot about earlier, that actually sending a video also kind of does filtering as well, because if they're like, oh, that was kind of weird. I just met this dude 5 minutes ago. He got in his car on the way home and already sent me a video. God, he must be desperate. No, I'm not desperate. I'm just here to congratulate you and thank you for your time. It was great meeting you, and I look forward to connecting with you later on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, it makes a ton of sense. We run into that sometimes with gifts. People are like, why did you send a gift that included my wife?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're not my jam. Yeah. You're not my tribe.
Maybe your wife is not as important to you as what my wife is to me. So that's cool, man. Enjoy whatever it is.
So it's funny to see. It's a perfect filter. I love that.
Yeah, it's really good. Anything else that you want to share before we tie a bow on this?
Oh man, this has been fun. I just get excited to, you know, I know the people that follow you love the Lord, and or you know they're doers, you know, at the end of the day. Like I get all these people like, John, like, you know, great message. I'm like, you heard it 3 years ago. Tell me how many people have you started loving on? Tell me what your radical generosity budget looks like. Like, get, you know, gratitude isn't just a feeling, it's an action. Uh-huh. So like, whether it's one person or five people or 10 people, like I get excited to go speak to leaders and doers, because if I get even 10 dudes that are leading companies or tribes or platforms to buy fully into this and start doing something with this, like, I mean, the ripple effect has been insane to see that.
Well, it's cool, man, dude. I'm thankful for your life. I'm thankful for our new friendship, because God gave each and every one of us three assignments on this earth. And I wanted to honor you for allowing me to serve my God better. He wants us to love him. He wants us to love his children. He wants us to make disciples. But through your book, through your life, through your testimony, you've allowed me to love people better by utilizing this giftology and being really strategic and putting reminders in my phone. And like, I'm sure that your nurturing system of giftology and building relationships is more strategic and intentional than mine, but you've allowed me to create my own system of loving people and the best way to disciple people and convince them into a relationship with Jesus Christ is to love them better than anybody else has loved them, because then it's not about religion anymore. It's about the love that you have for them. And the only way that we can love people our best is through Christ Jesus. But we have to steward our physical well, and you've allowed me to learn the things in my mind and practice them so I can kind of marry my love for God and the impact that I want to have on this earth with actual tools.
Functional, practical.
Yeah, and to be able to apply that, man. So I just wanted to make sure that I like fully honored you in that capacity because you and I haven't met, but we've met already, man. So I appreciate you, man, for real.
That gets me going. My love language is words of affirmation, and no.
Well, I'm gonna be a good friend to you, bro, because I give them, man.
I know you do.
Like when I think something about somebody, I'm going to say it. I will not filter it. So I'm not saying that because I'm like, dude, I'll come up with things to blow smoke up your skirt all day. If I think something about somebody, I'm gonna go ahead and say it to them, regardless if it's good or bad. So if you're doing right, man, I'm gonna cheer you on no matter what. And if you're not, I'm gonna be like, hey, man, you could probably be better here, John, if you're cool with me saying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's the kind of people I want in my life, man. I want people that are going to hold me accountable to what my capability is and what my mission on this earth is. And my mission on this earth is very freaking clear.
Amen.
So, love you, bro.
Love you too, dude. Thanks.
I'm going to pray real quick before we get out of here. So thank you, everybody, that joined us on Instagram. And if you guys go follow John. I'll make sure that his Instagram is in the show notes. I'll make sure that he's also got a podcast. I'm going to put the link to that in the show notes and make sure.
I will have a podcast. Not yet.
No, you have a podcast. It just has not released yet,
that
bro.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm speaking it into existence.
I agree with you.
Come on. That's all I need you to do. Just agree with me. Let's ride out, man. Dude, you got a story to tell, and I'm excited for you to have another platform to be able to bring amazing guests on, but most importantly, people listen to that show because of you and the impact you're making, man.
Amen.
All right, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you. We honor you. Thank you for this mighty man of God and the mission and the talents and the mantles you've placed on his shoulder. Thank you for his family. We just stand in agreement right now for provision and protection over his wife, over his four daughters, over this business mission that he's created for himself. There's a lot of people that have a business. There's a lot of people that may have a ministry, but there's very few people that find a way to turn their calling into an anointing and their anointing into an incredible impact on this planet to be able to build a business tree. So thank you for the business tree of Giftology and the man that's running the CEO role. Just give him wisdom, give him discernment, protect him, and keep him healthy. And all of the people that are listening to this show right now, just be with them. Holy Spirit, guide them, allow them to have the peace of you everywhere that they go, every interaction that they have, when they have an opportunity to build relationship, allow them to not feel weird about stepping into and practicing this new way of doing relationship and doing life in Giftology. So thank you for this guest. Thank you for this show. Thank you for this movement. And most importantly, thank you for your son that you have sent to this planet so we can live forever. So we thank you. We honor you in Jesus' mighty name. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Steve Weatherford Show. If you love what you heard today and you believe that God has a calling on your life, I want you to do something for me. I want you to share this episode with your friends and your family. And I want you to also make sure that you're following me on social media at Weatherford5 for a behind-the-scenes look at my life, my family, and my work. And remember, champion, greatness is in you because greatness made you. I'll see you next time.